at the time of recording this podcast episode, the final of season two of the Great Modern Railway Challenge is about to go live. I'm talking to two finalists from the first season, Adam Ashford and Callum Wilcox. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
To anybody who's been living on a rock for the past year and has not been anywhere near a television, what is the Great Modern Railway Challenge?
The Great Modern Railway Challenge is essentially the Great British Bake Off, but with model railways, where teams compete to be the greatest modellers in the country.
You made two layouts. You made one layout for episode two and got through to the final, where you also produced an alternative look at the 1970s with Melton Down. The first layout being Go Forth, which is featured on Callum's YouTube channel quite heavily and was donated to a fan of the show.
Yes, a young fan of the show who's 9 years old. And just by a chance opportunity, we were trying to find a new home for the layout. We had nowhere to store it. I turned around and said to his father, because the kid that now owns it wasn't there at the time. It was all done in complete secrecy, as could be seen on my YouTube channel. I said, would he like the layout? And his father was over the moon with that. So we gave it to him.
It's lovely. It's actually really nice. I watched that again today in preparation for this show, and I was feeling a bit fragile, and it was nice to watch that. I didn't cry, Adam. I just had something in my eye.
Soot in the eye.
Yeah, it's in the eye. And I think one thing that they make clear is that these are challenge layouts. These are designed to fulfill a purpose for the show. These aren't the best model railways that could ever be made.
No.
These have to be made in extremely short time scale.
Yeah, and they really are. I know there's been a lot of controversy online as to whether the participants on the show were given more time than what was actually shown on the programme. We can safely say it's actually the opposite, and we probably had less time than what was actually shown on the show when you take into the account of them stopping every 5 minutes saying, could you drop a hammer because we're trying to film this?
Because they don't want the audio
being ruined.
Up.
Yeah, so there's a lot of that, and you lose a good 2 hours of the filming on the day just down to that. It really was right to the edge as it makes out in the programme, if not more so.
How did this start for you guys? How did you get involved in the show and how did you hear about it?
I blame him.
There, that's his answer given away.
Well, Callum, you were team captain for the Railway Video Division.
Yes. Purely by chance, we were at the Western Model Railway Exhibition in Weston-super-Mare. Great exhibition, all for charity. And it was my first official outing with my World War I Trench Railway, Amiens 1918. And we just happened to be placed next to a fellow YouTuber by the name of Laurie Calvert, who is very, very famous on the Model Railway sci-fi side of the hobby. So his layout is very, very out there. It combines like Warhammer with model trains. It really is something completely different. It's always a draw on the audience, on the crowds at shows. We were having a good chat, and he mentioned about had a certain channel, a production company, got in contact about this new railway program that was being filmed this year. I said no, and he said, oh, I'll drop him a line and here's some details here. So a couple of days later, pretty much, well, I think it was about 2 days after the show, I received an email from this production company saying, we hear that you've had a chat with Laurie about our show, would you be interested? And at first I was a bit skeptical, because at this point model trains and TV just don't mix. There's been programs on before, such as the Biggest Little Railway, and that received mixed reviews. I think personally it's a great program, don't get me wrong, but I think towards the end of it you could see the production crew weren't enjoying the filming of the model train as much, and started focusing on more of the interesting scenes that were going on between some of the participants of that show. And I thought that might be another sticking point for this program. There's going to be a point where people are obviously going to fall out under a stressful act, and that's going to be the show. And I didn't want to get involved in that at first, but then the head producer got in contact personally and assured us this program was going to aim differently at an audience. It wasn't aimed to stereotype the hobby, it was aimed to encourage a new generation into it. And that was what we do as YouTubers, and to put that to a wider audience, to, you know, to a national audience, that it's unprecedented. So we said, yeah, we'll get involved.
Did you have any insight into how the production company came up with the idea for the show?
I think they said at the time it was Biggest Little Railway in the World. They kind of had the same idea sort of at the same time. And from what I remember,
they beat them to the post.
Yeah, but it was kind of lucky that they were two different sort of shows and they didn't cross over in any kind of way.
Yeah, very different shows.
So while they had kind of the same idea at the same time, Channel 4's came out first, and they were like, okay, well, we'll hold off for a little bit, so not to kind of
step on their toes.
Yeah, potentially lose viewers.
And also, I knew that the producer, he was very passionate in the hobby itself. He knew nothing about model trains when he started. They came up with this idea, and he actually went out of his way to learn about the hobby himself. And this was something that really, really surprised us, because we were expecting, when we turned up, because we hadn't met any of them until we turned up on set for filming, we finally got to meet the people that we've been talking to through emails, and he made himself known straight away. The first thing he said is, he went, right guys, we're going to build model railways. And all of us that, you know, as a team, and also the other teams, looked at each other, went, he said model railway, not train set. And that was a good start. Then he followed it, are you using analog or digital? And then we were like, ah, he's done his research. And he had been around to all the manufacturers. He'd also been around to drumming up interest at exhibitions. So he'd really done a lot of footwork to actually build on this program. And I know some people seem to think that with the first series it tends to be a bit cobbled together, but that he had really done a lot of groundwork and really researched this. From all the people he talked to, they wanted a program that was engaging to a wider audience, but at the same time didn't stereotype the people involved in it, which is where loads of other programs have fallen in the past. And he made sure that he didn't want that to happen.
I think certainly Trainspotting Live towed a difficult line.
That one is a very good example of what happens if it goes wrong. And I think that's the sense that it did. It fell into that trap. It was a very, very good program. But then when you watched it, it was almost cringeworthy in a way. But then again, in many aspects, a great model railway challenge to a professional modeler was. But at the same time, there was a lot of things in the program that were enthralling to a younger audience, or people that weren't interested in railways. And there were loads of people that were professional modelers that were watching it with their wives. And although they were there cringing, going, oh, this is not good for the hobby, their missus was like, so you do this up in the loft.
Why does it take you that long to do that?
Yeah, damn it. But yeah, it was a lot of that.
That's really interesting. There's almost a parallel with Tibby Clark, who in the 1950s visited the Tatlican Railway, became captivated by it, then ended up writing the Titfield Thunderbolt because he'd almost fallen in love with this world.
Yeah, and we noticed that with the camera crews. There were a couple of people that I noticed that were filming our layouts. At first, when you met them in the first episode, of course, everything's a bit clunky, like, how are you? And you're there, like, oh, yeah, you must be building this layout. And they're like, so you're a modern railway enthusiast? Like, yeah. By the end of it, when we went back for the final, they were like, oh, great to see you back. And then they would go around while you're doing stuff. And rather than, like, stopping you saying, oh, yeah, we're going to be filming this bit, they would stop you but go, how did you do that? And you're like, well, do you want the camera on it? Like, no, I'm not going to film this. I want to know how you did that. And you're thinking, you're actually really interested in this. You want to know how we did that. And it was a couple of camera crews. I wouldn't doubt it that a couple of the camera crews actually took up the hobby after being on set and seeing what we were doing and realizing that it was actually quite a fun process.
That's great. How did you go about forming your team?
Being team captain, I was given the task that I had to form a team of 6 members. And instantly I thought, well, it's going to be YouTubers. I want to put together a team of YouTubers and friends and family. And basically, first person I asked, of course, was Adam. Then we had Callum, who runs another YouTube channel, not to be confused with myself. We've got those 2 Callums on our team, which is quite funny with the camera crews, because they called us Callum 1 and Callum 2. We also had Will, who's another YouTuber. Then we were a bit stumped. So that was 4 of us. We were still 2 team members down, and we said, well, could we enter with not the full number? They were like, no, you need 6 members. So we then, a place where I worked, a customer came in a couple of years ago. I became good friends with him. He overheard me talk about model railways one day, and he went, I got a model railway. And anyway, we got chatting, and now we're really, really good friends. And he's building an amazing Marchwood military railway in 00, and that's where he grew up and how he remembers it. And he's amazing at scratch building. So someone like that on our team was vital. And we then went around a few more of our YouTuber friends, and sadly, nothing really came about. Many people were worried that it was going to stereotype the hobby. Some of them didn't have the time, and others were a bit skeptical that they didn't want to be involved in that sense, because being on television, it's not for everyone. With their YouTube videos, most of them would be behind the camera, and we asked quite a few, and all of them said the same thing. You know, it's one thing doing YouTube videos, but being on national television is another, and where you're not in control of the editing. They said, is there anybody else? They went, who got you into the hobby? I went, my granddad. And the funny thing was, he was one of the first people I also asked, but he went, no, I'm gonna leave it to you. We started building the layout. We were allowed to do prep at home. We were given the parts beforehand and started laying parts of the track that we were allowed to on the 2 boards that we were given. And they came out to do some behind the scenes filming, which was going to hopefully be used for our team intro, but because of time scales, it wasn't included, sadly. Of course, some of the production crew came along to film this. They knew we were only a team of five at the time, and of course, my granddad was there, and they said, well, why don't you get involved? And he said, no, I'll just hold him back. And of course, then they went, but it'd be really great family feel to be involved. And sure enough, they sort of twisted his arm, and he did. It was a great experience, and he loved every moment of it. And that's what it was great, because he's the man that got me involved in the hobby, and to have him alongside us on the team was just amazing. And it also showed the family fun aspect of it in the series. I think we were one of the first teams in that series that actually had a family member in the show. And I know that quite a lot of people keep on coming up and asking about that relationship and how our team got formed.
Adam, what went through your mind when you were asked to be on the show?
I had reservations, but it's more a case of like, well, what's the harm? Yeah, it could be a flop, but you never know, it could be this massive success. And it has been good for the hobby.
At the time, without knowing what was going into the programme, being asked to be on it, I think it's quite an undertaking. And I think it's quite an ask to ask someone to be on national television with their hobby. I mean, we have talked in the past about how the perception of hobbies is changing, and this programme is a big part of that, I think. But it didn't exist when you were asked.
We were the pilot, so you know, it was really a situation when we thought, what are we getting ourselves into? You know, this could either be a massive success or a massive flop. So we all knew how important this was when we got involved. It could have ended quite differently in a way, but thankfully it, the opposite way, which is what they promised, and it's what the programme achieved.
What will be your lasting memories of filming the show?
The smell of the room. So during the heat, where we stayed in the luxury of a certain brand hotel, there was right above a Indian restaurant, and my room happened to be so above the Indian restaurant,
right by the extractor,
the extractor fan for the kitchen, that my room stank of curry. And if you like curry, yeah, not so bad. If you don't like curry, like me, horrific.
it wasn't just the smell of curry. It was hot. It was above the kitchen. It was unbearably hot.
Yeah. And
it
did you get any sleep?
Well, thankfully, there were fans in all the rooms.
Because that could really affect your chances. If you're not getting any rest.
It did. And in the final, our chief scratch builder, AD, was then put in that said room. And he came in the next day and he had no sleep. He's a really, really upbeat guy. If you meet AD, he is bubbly, funny. He literally, he's always a great laugh. But that was the only time I've seen him with almost like the soul sucked out of him. Thankfully, they moved him the next night and he got such a better sleep and it was back to his normal self the next day. But yeah, it was just unfortunate, I guess, for that hotel being in the room. But it was a sort of an ongoing joke between us that who was going to get the curry room, we called it. That was a good one. That was a good memory.
How about you, Callum? What's going to be your lasting memory of the show?
I think, well, obviously the camaraderie, the effect of winning the first heat, because we didn't go there to expect to win. We went there as a joke and to promote the hobby. That was the reason why we did it. And when they turned around and said that we had won, because it was tight between us and the Track Lane Ninjas, it was very, very close. And their layout was stunning. And it literally was like, we know who's won this. We looked over, went, they've won it. That's it. We're just, you know, smile, cheer. I think there is a bit when they announced us as a winner, I'm literally looking at them clapping, and then I went, they didn't read out their name, they read out our name. Wow, what the hell's happened? So that was a very good memory. But I think the funniest memory was some of the things that they recorded but must have ended up on the cutting room floor. I think the best bit was definitely in the final with a situation involving our wiring, which I will forever remember. All the layouts were given a male and female connector for a bus wire to run the train between all the layouts. Our wire, I believe, was put round on the wrong way. Four layouts had it round the right way, we had it round the wrong way, or one of us had it round the right way and the four other ones had it the wrong way, whichever way you look at it. Anyway, because we were the lesser number, we had to turn it round, and it was down to Will to do the wiring, as he said he was the chief wire, which is fine. And then it was a bit of an insult to himself when he got it wrong. His dad, who replaced my grandfather in the final episode because he was away on holiday and he couldn't make it, because like I said, we were expected to get through to the finals. Will's dad was off doing something else and then wandered back into the room of this mist of this argument of the male and female connectors coming around, to which he very confusedly looks at the wire and says male and female, which makes it into the program.
Male and female?
However, there was an argument that ensued between Will and his dad about what the problem was. So Will was trying to explain, we can't put a male-male connector together because there won't be electrical circuit. And his dad was slightly confused by this. And so we watched this argument going on and it started getting quite heated. We noticed a cameraman had spotted this argument going on, started laughing uncontrollably. And he was trying to keep his camera level while trying to keep himself balanced under the baseboard, that it attracted a second cameraman. So there was a point where we had two of the three cameramen actually filming us just laughing at this argument. And we were so hoping it was going to make it into the programme, but they just got the bit where he says male and female at the beginning of the argument. But it was so funny. It was all sorted. It was all sorted within 5 minutes. But that was one of the memories that sticks in my mind from the show and that didn't make it into the cut. But yeah, it was just hilarious. And Will laughs a bit. It was just the heat of the moment. It was just hilarious.
Nah, it's not a proper challenge if you have one argument.
No, there was many off camera. Easily done in a very, very hot room with lots of lights and lots of cameras.
If anyone listening to the show wants to go on the Great Model Railway Challenge and it enters a team into it, what advice would you give to them?
Obviously avoid the curry room.
Bring along cake. Yeah. Cake is always great for bribery. Yeah. Not that there was any bribery. There wasn't really. Planning is key. We all gave ourselves set tasks. We gave Will the task of wiring. My grandfather's very good at his wooden carpentry and painting, so we gave him the task of the back scenes and doing all the woodwork. Adam, and again, joint with Will, are very, very good at track and track plans, so they did all the track work. AD, scratch building. And then there was me, who enjoys doing the scenery. Then that left Callum, and Callum, before the show, had never built a model railway before. He runs his model railway on the floor because he doesn't have a permanent place for his layout, so he had not done any of this. So we taught him a bit of everything on the show. So what you see in the show of him building, he actually learned on set. In the first episode, he didn't know really what to do, but we explained to him a bit of ballasting, how to build kits, how to build buildings and weathering. And in the final, he literally banged out about 20 Metcalf kits, a whole box of Metcalf kits in the space of, I think, one morning, I think. He goes, what do
I've
I do
got
now?
Metcalf kits in the drawer, yeah, that I haven't built in 20 years.
Yeah, in the heat as well, with the Nissen huts. We built a Nissen hut as one of our pre-builds because we didn't know what to do. We had like 8 of them on there, but he built all of them in like the space of a morning. But we gave everybody a set task to do, and then we all got on and did it, and hey presto, there was a layout.
Going in with a vision of knowing what you want to do is going to help you massively. I know when we went into the heat and the final, we had done so much pre-planning and knowing what we wanted it to look like. Obviously it's not going to look exactly how it's going to look in your head.
It looked very close.
Yeah, so if you know exactly what you want it to look like at the end of the day, as long as it's close enough, then you should hopefully do rather well. I know, we mentioned the track ninjas in our heat. They lost. Essentially, the reason we won in that heat was because our layout worked. It just ran flawlessly, whereas theirs, they struggled with derailing and trains crashing into each other.
That seems to be a common theme. I mean, often one team will struggle with derailments or poorly laid track, perhaps.
Yeah. I don't think it was common across the board, but there was always seemed to be the odd team here and there that didn't quite think of this one aspect that is maybe vital, that it's just think, oh yeah, it'll be fine on the day. But if you haven't tested it, then that's probably where you're going to fall down.
Our series was the pilot series. No one knew what to expect. I mean, the layouts were not what you would call conventional model railways by far. And that's definitely been proven in this series. The layouts are designed for TV effect. And we sort of knew that with our layout. So we designed it around it. Obviously, being on YouTube, we had an idea of what it was like. So we went in there with a rough idea of what it could be like. You know, we knew that obviously if you're banging a hammer around every 5 minutes, you ain't going to get any good audio. So we kind of thought maybe the production crew would think the same way. And so we took along a load of tools with us that made cutting track like hacksaws and stuff, while other teams were using rotary saws, which would make a lot of noise. So they had to stop when they were cutting their track, while we would just go snip, snip while they were filming. So it gave us an advantage in that sense.
How much notice did the program producers give you on what the episode was going to be about and what your challenge on the day was going to be?
About 2 months, I think.
It was 2 to 3 months, wasn't it?
It was 2 to 3 months. They gave us a theme and they said, give us back a theme on what you want to do. So our heat was obviously TV show. So we had a little think about what our strong points were. So obviously I was doing a lot of modelling of World War One at the time, and I wanted to really incorporate somehow World War One into it. Being 2018, it also was the 100th anniversary of the end of the First World War, so I thought it would be another appropriate thing to try and get on telly as well. And we thought, well, how do we incorporate that into a TV show that everybody knows? Callum mentioned Dad's Army, and then all of a sudden we thought, what World War One programmes? Then all of a sudden we all sort of clicked. It was like a light bulb moment. We all went, Blackadder Goes Forth.
I'm trying to think what other options were.
I think that was pretty much it.
I think we... We toyed with Doctor Who, yeah, which one of our other teams did. I think we mentioned Midsummer Murders in there at some point as well.
Yeah, we did. Yeah, there was a little bit mention of that. But when we mentioned Blackadder, everybody just went, yeah, that's it.
I think one of the things that stood out was the amount of references to the show that you managed to cram in to allow Anne in the time that you had, which must be down to the planning.
Yeah. The thing is with model railways, you know, you see like a little cameo scene on a model railway. You don't see really a model railway that's dedicated to a whole genre in a way. Like a, well, you get sometimes you get a Thomas the Tank Engine layout, or you'll get like a Harry Potter layout. But in the sense of like a TV show, you might see like a little cameo somewhere, like with like a Dalek or something sitting on a layout. You don't see in general a Doctor Who layout. We knew that our layout heavily depending on the points would be rewarded on our layout looking like what it was supposed to look like. So we really went to town with the animations. We crammed, I think, about 7 cameo scenes in there, and then also gave it another aspect of it being called Go Forth, which is obviously a play on Black Adder Goes Forth. The layout also went forth and showed the advance from green, lush, pre-war fields at one end to the harsh trench, deadlock trenches at the other end. So it also captured a bit of the essence of World War One in there as well. Well, I think we wanted to try and work that in there as well as obviously the satire as Blackadder.
Did you have to work to a set budget for the show?
So we had a budget across a number of manufacturers. So Hornby had a set budget amount compared the whole thing. Backman, Pico, etc., etc., would all have X amount of the budget set to them.
So they're contributing this amount of product?
Yeah. So I think we had a set list of things that we could order from them as well. And I think some of the manufacturers, we had a bit more open rein on what we could get. So you would be limited into where you could get certain things from. So I know for the final, we went through it meticulously, what we would want and what we needed from certain manufacturers. Like, well, we get this from such and such. Oh, my God, it'll be cheaper from such and such. And I was like, okay. There were certain things we needed, or we thought it would be nice to have, that we listed for, but we can't afford that in the budget, so we'll take that out.
Is stock excluded from your budget?
It was very much included.
Well, so some of the manufacturers, all they would provide was rolling stock. In saying that, with our Blackadder layout, the most of the rolling stock that was on the layout was my own personal World War One stuff.
That's what I was wondering. Were you able to bring along your own kit? Because I know that there was a controversy over one team in that one of the items they brought from home was enormous.
Yeah.
In the first season, and I wondered if stock was part of that or if you were allowed to bring stuff from home.
Our layout wouldn't have been very good if we built this lovely World War One scene and then had a Great Western IET running through it. It just wouldn't work. It would ruin the whole effect of that layout. So obviously we had to incorporate my own personal rolling stock to create that scene.
Do you get penalised for that, or is that allowed?
No, the rolling stock and vehicles were excluded from...
I'm not sure if they changed it for the second series.
But for our series, because there was, at first, vehicles, like die-cast vehicles, were excluded, but then they realised that if a vehicle class is one of your 5 items and you had like a car park on your layout, then that's all your pre-builds in a car park. And they realized that that couldn't happen. It was the same with trees as well, because they were going to try and make trees a pre-build item. And then they realized that trees just wouldn't work as well, because obviously if you want a forest, then that's your stuff gone.
So there's a bit of a mix when it comes to stock, that some items that you had to buy on your budget and some things you could bring from home.
Some of the things you could buy on the budget, we tended to stay away from the rolling stock, ideally.
Do you think that because it just needlessly spends money you don't have?
Yeah, it was basically we knew that it was all about the layouts at the end of the day, and you needed mainly to make sure you had the right amount of track, you had the track you needed, you needed to have all the scenery and stuff. Rolling stock, in some cases, we didn't even spend the entire budget. There was also another little budget. It was only a small, very, very small budget that was miscellaneous items. So items that we couldn't get from any manufacturer. So this was things like modelling materials and such as like styrofoam and stuff like that. You had to go off and get stuff. And I know that some of the teams that were doing more elaborate layouts, such as Laurie Calvert with his sci-fi layout, quite a lot of the sci-fi stuff is obviously nothing to do with any of the manufacturers involved in the show. So that budget, was really sort of a restriction for him. That little budget did help us and all the teams in a way for like modelling materials. But in some ways, it restricted other teams, which was a bit of a shame. But I think they've realised that for the series too.
Do you think that the Railway Video Division team had an advantage in that you're used to being seen on camera, or at least you're camera savvy?
Definitely. I think that if you watch the first series back, in a way, compared to series 2, it is very, very clunky.
The last episode they filmed, which featured Missenden and their controversial
row of houses.
their row of houses.
Or streets of houses.
Yeah.
It's
a good enough thing to draw people in and think, oh, this could be quite juicy, to get people to watch next week and so on and so forth.
If you realise which ones were filmed in what order, you will see that they are slightly more clunkier to other ones. And it depending as well, because quite a lot of the people that were on the show had never been on television before, while with us, we were quite lucky, all being YouTubers, and there's a number of YouTubers that were also involved in that series as well. And you could see their personalities really, really shine, because we weren't shy of talking to the camera. We knew what to be expected while being filmed, you know, what would grab an audience, and then carry on with your work. So in a way, it was sort of, it did work to our advantage in that sort of sense, since they could drag us out for an interview. Besides the peacocks, of course, the peacocks would always ruin that. And I'm sure the camera crews, if any of the camera crews are watching, would totally agree with that.
Just want to clarify, the peacocks were not a name of a competing team.
No.
The actual peacocks that live at Fawley Hill.
Yeah.
They are loud.
They are loud. And you would go outside, you would do an interview, and then halfway through the interview, one would squawk, and it would ruin the whole sound. And also, it didn't help that you have the landing for Heathrow, I think, as well. So you have all the jumbos coming in to line up. And they would... So you had to work around the planes and then the peacocks. And there was one take, which was a really stressful point in our team's build. They dragged me out for an interview, and I just wanted to get it over and done with, and it took me about 36 takes to get my words out, and the camera crews were getting quite frustrated, and finally I got it perfect. And just as I finished the sentence, a nearby peacock squawked, and the boom guy just shook his head, and I knew straight away that that was a write-off.
Is there anything that you, when you filmed it, you thought, this is great TV, this is definitely going to be in there, and you were shocked when it didn't?
Team profile stuff we kind of wish had been in. Definitely. Which now that they've, in the second series, they've got that extra 15 minutes of runtime that they can include little bits and pieces of those things.
Because it introduced the teams and it gave everybody a bit more of a connection to the teams involved. With us, there's some guys building a model railway. We know nothing about their background, and we sort of gave hints away that we were a group of friends, that there's a family connection. And it was by the end when I think most people really only got the idea that my grandfather was my grandfather, when we said, oh, this is like a really great experience, and we never thought this out when I got involved in the hobby. Everybody sort of clicked at home just as the end credits roll, went, wait, that must be his grandfather. It was that sort of thing, but that would have been covered in the intros, which they now have included in series two, but sadly they ended up on the cutting room floor.
Would you go back for another showdown if they asked you, for example, taking on this season's winners in a head-to-head?
Well, personally, I would love to give it another go, but comparing the layouts from this series to the ones in our series, I would say the ones in this series are a completely different league to what we had.
The standard of modelling
is
shot up.
I think that's partly down to actually our series, as in they've seen our series, they know what to expect, and they know what gets the points, and of course they could really work on it. I mean, us, everybody was like, it's got to include animation, and everybody was like, a train running around a track, that's an animation, that will do. A bus on the road, that will do. We went a bit more out there with our rail gun and our stuff, and the bunker that lit up, and of course we fought a bit outside the box, but the people in this series have gone way outside the box. I think that if we went back, I mean, what some of the people have created in this series, it's unbelievable. I mean, I've watched the semi-final with the Knights layout, which the...
Team Grantham.
Team Grantham built. And the fact that they had the vehicle that drove, which was their horse, onto the back of the train, and then it went around, did a jousting thing, and then drove off by itself, waited at a drawbridge came down, and it drove across the drawbridge before driving onto a carousel, which then turned on all the lights. I mean, I wouldn't know where to start with any of that, and they did that in the same time as we had. Wow, we had a rubber band that fired a railgun, and I still get people asking how I made that gun recoil, but it was just very simple, you know, mechanics. But all these teams now going on there with all these electronics and computer boards, which of course is risky, but if you know what you're doing, they work really, really well. And the end effect is just boom. Our layouts, if our Blackadder layout was in one of the heats, it wouldn't have stood a chance against any of the layouts in this one.
Out of all the layouts featured on the show, which one would you like to own?
It would be Go For for me. I mean, we technically still have Melton Down. It's in a state of restoration. We Will was lucky enough to have the space to keep Melton Down. I mean, Go For, they're big layouts. They're 10 foot by 5 foot. No one really has that space. So we did a couple of shows of it at my local model shop. From there, we thought, well, we're going to auction it off for charity. And then when this opportunity of this young kid, massive fan of the show, and of course for his dad to sort of just have a chance encounter, and I said, well, you know, he went, oh, you were the guy on the TV show, and my son was a massive fan of your team, he really wanted you to win, and he loved your Blackadder layout. I went, does he want it? He was a bit like, sorry? And I was like, no, does he want it? And he went, how much? And we were like, it's free. You got a van? He's like, yeah, it's out in the car park. I'm like, do you want to go collect it? And he went, Okay. And then I basically spent a day rebuilding it in his garage in complete secret. And it was hidden in that garage for about 2 weeks until his parents sat down, watched the episode, which we were featured in. And then they went, do you want to come out to the garage, have a little look? His parents then filmed the reaction, which they kindly gave to me, which I put in my video, documented my video of me rebuilding it. And then the end clip is literally his mum's footage of him seeing the letter for the first time, and it's priceless. And that's why we did the show. We would love to kept go forth, because there were so many memories tied up in that layout. We had so much fun building it, and that's why I would keep that layout for the personal preferences. But as for layouts from the show in general, I think Grantham's Swiss layout, but also as well the one with that they were against in that same heat with the canal and the real water, I mean that was impressive in itself engineering wise.
Yeah, it was not necessarily one I'd want to keep myself.
That would be a bit risky on all your rolling stock, but the engineering behind it was amazing. And those are sort of the layouts that stuck out for me in this series. I mean, especially Grantham's, I mean that was just a work of art
for me. I mean, Melton Down was kind of my baby because it was mainly my idea, that one. And we were lucky enough to keep it.
Because I know that some teams have smashed theirs up.
For a prime example is in our heat, the moment they stopped filming, Track Lane Ninjas broke up their layout.
It was
completely destroyed, apart with the exception of
the tower block. The tower block was lifted off, and then the rest of it was pushed into a bin. We reckon about 65% of the layouts that were built on in our series were destroyed on set. There were a few that are on the circuit. A couple were upgraded. I mean,
because Aberdeen, both their layouts survive.
It'd be nice if more people followed your example and donated them.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was understandable, though, because we had to arrange all the transport to get it back to a location which was big enough to store it in the time that we found it. I mean, it was just by chance that this guy's dad turned up at the correct time, because a couple more weeks and it would have had to have been broken up. There's no doubt about that. We couldn't shift it. It was, you know, it just happened to be at that point. And
in terms of layouts, okay, both of Aberdeen's, Basingstoke Bodger's heat layout,
both of the Forley Flyers layouts.
Both
the
Forley's layout, that's five. Both of ours.
Mistledon's has also survived.
Oh yeah, because they developed theirs since the programme.
They've rebuilt theirs as how they would have built it if the show had no rules, which is fair point. It shows what could be done.
Oh, that was featured in a magazine recently.
It was featured in a magazine as well. It's a really great optical illusion when you see it in the flesh.
The Doctor Who layout from our heat.
Yeah, that
survives as well.
There's probably another one or two that survived, but considering that there are three layouts per heat, the winning layout tended to survive because there was an option that it was going to be involved in the final, but it never materialised. More often than not, the final layouts survived, but the heat layouts didn't. Most of the ones that survived are owned by teams that are modelling clubs, and of course they have big vans, big club rooms for them to be put in. We had small garages that were taken up with our own personal projects. We didn't really have anywhere else, so it was just lucky that our model shop turned around and said, we've just moved into a new premises, there's a spare room here. I'm like, ah, could we use that spare room for a couple of months? And yeah, that's how it survived.
What do you think the show's greatest strength is?
I think it is encouraging a new generation into the hobby. What they've done, it's very, very clever in the sense that it shows railway modelling, not to every modeller's taste, obviously, but to a novice or someone that doesn't want to lay out that's just about trains, it's completely different. It's given model railways a whole new spin. Ordinarily, if you were building a model railway, you would either have to either just abide by rule one and just run whatever you want, or you would go for a set period on a set location, set theme. The Great Model Railway Challenge changed that completely by adding these weird themes to it. Ours were quite good themes, but the ones in Series 2 are really, really out there, and like the sky is the limit. The variety of the layouts that were seen like in a heat like that were completely different. I mean, people probably looking at home going, see, it doesn't have to be about the trains. I could have like a train that moves a rocket.
Triang's battle set?
Battle Space. I've got a number of their items. I mean, when I discovered that as a kid, I went around old secondhand model railway shops and I purchased a lot of that. And in fact, we could have included a lot of that in Melton Down. It would have looked out of place. It was like Cold War rockets on the back of a train that actually fired. And I think they were only reason why they stopped producing them because they were banned by health and safety. But I managed to get one of the rocket launchers on the back of a bogey bolster, put it on the spring, and I thought, yeah, when modern toys have like little rockets, it's sort of, you're lucky if it goes a metre. So I called back the spring. It was quite a tough thing to pull back, and it clicked into position. I'm like, oh, great. Put the rocket on it, fired the trigger, and I kid you not, it fired about 8 metres across the room that I was in, bounced off the window and came back and hit me. it was that powerful, and I can see why they sort of banned it. But that was what Triang did at the time to try and encourage kids into model railways. It's a resurgence of that through the channel, and I wouldn't doubt it that manufacturers are looking at different ways to incorporate this into their hobby, and I think that, you know, they'd be silly not to.
I think it was Phil Parker was collecting every colour of giraffe wagon. Or something like that. Because they used to make a zoo train with the giraffe sticking their heads at the top.
Yeah. And then they did one in the Battle Space range, but they replaced the giraffe with a sniper.
I think it just shows that it doesn't have to take years to build a model railway if you really want it. If you really want to go quickly, it can. I mean, not so as quickly as it did as we did it in, but you could quite easily build a model railway in a month and start enjoying it. I mean, straight away, you don't even have to finish it. You could do X amount of planning, but at the end of the day, if you just get on and do it, carry on, enjoy, build.
It's part of the fun. It depends on what part of the hobby you find the most fun. If running trains is your part, is the funnest part of the hobby for you, then building a quick layout that you could put together, putting a train on the track and it goes, and that's your enjoyment of hobby there sorted. If it's building, you could take as long as you wanted. And I must admit, coming away from the show, I realized a lot of things that we did on set I could incorporate into many of my own projects a lot quicker. I know there were a few techniques I learned which we then put to effect on Go Forth, but I had to do it a lot quicker, and I found there were a few shortcuts and still managed to achieve the same effect. You know, maybe not as high of quality, but a similar effect in literally, I would say, a hundredth of the time that it took me on my World War One layout and me on 1918.
I think one of the things they also do is emphasising how important it is to get the running right.
Yeah.
Because as soon, like, when you get trains running on your layout, it is something you can use and enjoy.
Yeah.
Up until then, you're just going to get frustrated.
Mm, definitely. If you get that right, then you're basically done. Your layout is then developed around there. And that's how we developed all of our layouts. Does it work? Yes, the track works. Right, now we can concentrate on the scenery.
If you guys were the producers of the show, what would you improve or change about it?
I personally would probably include a bit more on behind the scenes on the team. I know they definitely improved on this in series two, but maybe a bit more showing their layouts. I know that there's been a lot of people saying it'd be nice to see the team's layouts, personal layouts that they've gone with. I know that, you know, for us anyway, they did a huge, I think they did about an hour's filming of my World War One trench railway. But it's a bit more of another connection and the reasoning behind it. The layouts that they built on the show were, in some cases, a slice of their own personalities in TV form. And it would have been nice to see a bit, you know, what they can do if they had all the time in the world, in a way. I imagine some of the team's layouts involved are real stunning works of art. And it would have been nice to see a bit more of those.
Less puns.
Oh, no. You got to enjoy a good pun.
I think I'm with you there, Adam.
Yeah.
No.
I do love a good pun.
I love a good pun.
But there's quite a lot of innuendos and things like that dotted throughout both series. And in series two, it's become a bit of a competition for who could get the closest on the edge boundary joke or gag in without being spotted. I find it quite funny. I know that everybody finds the puns a bit like,
I'm, you know, grimacing right now.
Some of the puns are really, really like.
I'm guessing you've been recognised in public. Was it from the TV show or was it from your channel generally?
I generally get recognised from Steam Locus in Profile stuff rather than Great Model Railway Challenge or anything else really. And I don't really show my face on YouTube much nowadays. So we're at the South Devon Gala back in April for their 50th, and this kid comes up and says, "Oh, are you Adam from Steam Nuggets?" I was like, "Yes." "Oh my god, oh my god." It's proper like fan moment. It's like, "Okay, you alright?" It's like, "Can you sign this for me just to prove to my friends that I've met you?" It's like, "Yeah, no problem. There you go. You having a good day?" "Yeah, is Chris around?" He happened to be at the same event. It's like, "Well, he's around somewhere. You might see him at some point. Not sure where he is at the moment." Oh my god, I was like, "No problem. Do you want a photo?" "Yeah." Take a photo with him. It's like, "Have a good day." It's like those sort of situations, like, I'm not quite sure what to do in this situation. Kind of try and make their day sort of thing.
Well, it's been a bit of both. Quite a lot of people recognise us out in public anyway, when we're at galas or at exhibitions.
Is that usually from your YouTube channel?
From YouTube. But since we have done the Great Model Railway Challenge, there's been, especially when displaying layouts as such, I mean, last year I did a lot of shows with my World War One Trench Railway Amiens 1918, and quite a lot of the shows also coincide with the airing of our episodes. And in fact, I think I was at a show the week after our episode aired, and we had people that wouldn't ordinarily watch YouTube videos turn up to the show, and families that ordinarily wouldn't turn up to a model railway exhibition. That was another bonus of the show. The amount of the peak in numbers of people going to model railway exhibitions after the show aired. All the people that I was talking to, I think I did about 5 shows in succession. Their numbers were up between 15% and 20% at each show. It was that much. And it was the same.
That's really positive.
Really positive. And it was the same from my local model shop as well. Their sales were up 20%. They couldn't believe it. It was showing that people were actually getting interested in it. But anyway, people were turning up to the shows that wouldn't ordinarily watch YouTube or go to model railways. And there was one at the Taunton show, which was the week after our episode aired. And this little kid came up to the layout, and we gave him a chair because my layout's up quite high. And he stood up and he saw my troop train and my 009 layout going around. He turned around and said to me, "That looks like the troop train that was on that Blackadder layout." I said, "That's because it is." And then he grabbed his mum and went, look, it's the Railway Video Division and they've got their Blackadder layout here." And although it wasn't the Blackadder layout, he was absolutely captivated. And his mum's like, "Oh, we're massive fans of the show. It's the only reason why we're here is because we've seen the show." And he can't believe that he's actually seen more of the people on it. And "You are in the final," he said. "You're not going to give anything away, are you?" No, not allowed to. We're not going to tell you what's going to happen." He's like, "Oh, he's so excited." He said, "We really hope you win." And yeah, especially with the younger audience, it's great. Yeah, so that's what the show was really all about. It's a show in a nutshell. There was also, you mentioned about signing an autograph with that kid as well. We actually printed off a photograph of the team because we weren't all there at the same time. He was seeing, you know, like, whereas at the Taunton show, it was me and you. And then when it was at the Signal show, it was me and Callum and my grandfather and Adie. And on each occasion, he asked for our autographs, but it meant that he couldn't get all of our autographs at the same time. Will and his dad obviously live much further away than us, and there was no chance of really them meeting up. And he asked us politely for all of our signatures, our autographs basically. And so what we did is we printed off a picture, a team picture, which I used as the thumbnail for the video on the layout. And we signed that picture, all of us, and then we posted it to him with a little message on the back. And we like to think that made his day. Just a bit surreal, really, but nice. Yeah, it was moment. Yeah, it was a bit surreal. It was just nice to know that it was appreciated that much.
I think that's as good a place as any to finish up on. Yeah. Thanks again for coming on the show, guys. I really appreciate all your help and your insights into TV magic.
Yes, the optical illusion of TV magic.
Thanks again to Callum and Adam for coming on Railway Mania. If you want to check out their YouTube channels, Callum is at SDJR7F88. And Adam is at 82A Studios. They both make railway and railway modding videos. If you're listening to the audio-only version of this podcast and fancy a look at what the railways that featured in the Great Model Railway Challenge look like, then take a look at the version on YouTube where there's a few clips of Melton Down and Go Forth. If you're interested in more Railway Mania podcasts, then please do subscribe and turn on notifications so you get a little reminder every time an episode is posted. Once again, thanks very much for listening, and I hope to be back with another Railway Mania episode soon.